You are now listening to Conversations with Congressman King. Discussion on issues that impact your life with your representative from Iowa's 5th District.
Welcome to Conversations with Congressman King. This is Steve King, and we're here today with Lee Terry. Lee Terry of Nebraska's 2nd Congressional District, representing, generally speaking, Omaha. My neighbor to the west, the fellow whom we shake hands across the Missouri River on a regular basis. We work on some things together, including transportation links, economic development issues, and welcome aboard with a conversation with Congressman King, Lee Terry.
Well, I really appreciate you inviting me, and most of all, you're one of my closest friends, and I really appreciate that.
Well, I've enjoyed us working together, and as I watched you from afar, and your father from afar, too.
So
there are two generations of Terrys that I'm aware of that have made a mark on our region.
Yeah, and Dad's gone over to several of your events over the last few years.
He has. I remember meeting him in Mills County at Glenwood at one of my events that were there, and I appreciate him getting out the way he does.
Oh, yeah. You know, we still have family in Iowa. My mom was raised in Oakland in your district, and we've got relatives in Carroll and Glidden and some distant relatives in Harlan still.
So would it be true, Congressman Lee Terry, that you have Iowa blood in you?
I do.
And a little earlier we were joking about the expatriate Iowans, but in your case, it's you were born in Omaha?
Born and raised in Omaha. Haven't left other than to work here.
And as a young man, you stepped into this role, and you have a seat on the Commerce Committee now, and Energy and Commerce Committee. That's a significantly important role. We were talking earlier about the role of energy in our economy and our society, and you were talking about the access to the hydrocarbons that are there on U.S. soil or U.S. controlled resources. Could you expand a little bit on what you think is out there, or what you're informed is out of there by your committee activity, the Outer Continental Shelf and in Anwar?
Well, we've got probably about 200 years worth of natural gas off of our continental shores and in Alaska. Now, because of our policies in the United States, we are now importing liquefied natural gas just to try and bring down the price of natural gas, which, of course, all of your farmers know about the price of natural gas and fertilizer and their products. It makes no sense that we have a 200-year supply, but yet we have the highest natural gas prices in the United States. Not only is it hurting our ag folks in our states, but it's running chemical manufacturing, steel manufacturing, other manufacturing that relies upon natural gas to other countries. Fertilizer plants, that's almost, 80, 90% of their cost of manufacturing.
90.
Who would fault them for moving to Mexico where it's one-seventh of the price in the United States?
Right, and if they're going to stay alive as a fertilizer company, they have no choice. And I know we have a couple of large companies that have relocated to Trinidad Tobago.
Yes.
Because there's cheap natural gas there and they can operate and function there without the burden that has been put upon them to do business in this country. And they're still good American companies, and they're keeping our American farmers in business because they're still providing a competitive fertilizer into the United States. Have you, Congressman Lee Terry?
Well, I'm going to interrupt you right there, Steve. Sorry, but, when they took those jobs to Trinidad, yes, that's an American company, but now they're establishing a nice middle class in Trinidad. Those are U.S. middle class jobs, and that company is doing what they have to do to survive, and we have to look as congressmen what's the right policy to keep them here. And having these type of energy policies that force them to have to go out of the United States to survive is wrong.
And I agree with you 100%. And the one I was going to ask you, and I will, have you given any thought to what happens if we lose the ability to produce fertilizer for our own food here in the United States, if Trinidad and Tobago were not there for those good American companies to provide as an alternative to being uncompetitive and taking them out of business? What happens if Hugo Chavez in Venezuela and the Russians are the ones who provide the fertilizer that controls the food supply for the United States and the world?
Well, then the costs of whoever will sell it to us will be dramatically higher. So it'll drive up all of our food costs and create spiraling inflation and ruin our economy. Other than those things, not much, Steve.
Well, no one talks very much about a fertilizer cartel. But if one could control the fertilizer for the world or influence the cost of that fertilizer significantly, which you've alluded to, then you also control the food production in the world.
Absolutely.
And the cost of that food.
Yes. We, for the vast majority, 95%, we raise our own. Now, there's obviously some fruits and some vegetables that can't be raised here, or at least completely around year long. But for the most part, we would lose our ability to be food independent,
you
as
know,
we are.
Congressman Lee Terry, I went to an ag hearing out in Stockton, California, and they're different out there. I was quite surprised to learn. In fact, the now chairman made a comment about how they thought a little differently about agriculture in California. But as I looked across the witnesses, there were four witnesses there that day, and from left to right, they were identified in their documents and testified in this fashion. First witness was for the fruit, the second one was for the nuts, the third one was for the organic, and the fourth one was for the fairy shrimp. And, you know, I learned a lot in California at that hearing, and I wonder what you might think of that.
I'm not going there.
It's just a matter of congressional record. I'm only telling you what I saw that day. I make no comment either. But I did get to see some fairy shrimp. There are little squiggly things in the mud puddle there, and you can get a little place that rains, and there's a tiny little puddle the size of a dinner plate. And over time,
and what part of California was this?
Stockton, California.
Oh, okay.
In fact, the location where we're seeking to, or maybe have the USS Iowa docked, thanks to some help that we've had out there.
Yeah.
So, I learned a lot on those ag hearings, and I
don't ask, don't tell.
You're on the Energy and Commerce Committee for a reason, to avoid such things as that. So let me take you back to energy. 406 trillion cubic feet of natural gas, outer continental shelf, I'm told.
Yes.
A massive amount of natural gas. Why don't we drill that?
It's simply because of environmental politics. The environmentalists are controlling the agenda. Then we get into our own inherent politics, where because they are becoming such a powerful lobby within the states, that those representatives from those states do everything they can to fight it. And so we just have had an extremely difficult time being able to do that, either through a national policy or state policy.
Do the environmentalists know that there's never been any kind of environmental damage due to a spill of natural gas?
They may know that. That's not repeated by their rhetoric, but they will say the potential is there because we've had them before our committees.
And so that potential, I wonder, what do they envision?
Well, they just think that just the very fact that you have a facility, a rig, that the potential is there for all of this damage. Not that we've engineered them so they can withstand anything in the ocean, that there hasn't been leaks. None of that matters. It's all about stopping it.
Do they know, though, that if the natural gas erupts from a well casing that's drilled by man, and it escapes into the atmosphere, that is virtually indistinguishable from the millions and billions of cubic feet of natural gas that escape into the atmosphere on a daily basis from the ocean floor?
Oh, I'm sure that they do. But then again, they just don't want us to use fossil fuels.
It doesn't fit their agenda.
It does not.
You're listening to Conversations with Congressman King. We're here with Congressman Lee Terry, Nebraska's 2nd District, representing the Omaha area, and a good friend, and a friend on the west side of the Missouri River, that place where Lewis and Clark traveled up and down a couple of centuries ago, and something that ties us together in our history.
Now, did you meet them?
Actually, no, that was my older brother.
Okay.
I don't have an older brother. So, but I have traveled that path and most of that path, and I have driven the route all the way up to Bismarck, and also I rode the White Pirogue on the return of the White Pirogue in October of 2003 down from Gavin's Point Dam to Sioux City.
Wow, that'd be a neat experience.
And everybody on the boat except me was dressed in buckskins and had muzzle loaders, and We were quite vintage, with the exception of myself.
Well, I think you'd look good in buckskins.
I really should have put some on. I felt a little out of place in that travel, but I got to grab a hold of the oars and the poles, and we took it down through the wild stretch of the river from Gavin's Point on down to Ponca, Nebraska, where the river's channelized. That's the hardest stretch to get through, but anybody that hasn't been on the wild stretch of the Missouri River has missed something. It's beautiful up there.
Yeah.
So
did you at least take your suit jacket off?
I did that, and I loosened my tie, Lee Terry.
Wow.
I was informal. It's my image of blue jeans and cowboy boots that I may have finally put behind me.
Ah.
Tell me a little bit about some of the other endeavors you have here in Congress, aside from the energy issues. What else keeps you up at night, gets you up early in the morning? What makes your blood pressure go up and down?
Well, again, it comes back to how we're going to secure this nation. I'm just very frustrated with the rhetoric and direction that Congress is taking that I think is going to make our country a lot less safe. So I worry about our war against the terrorists and by our policies of appeasement, by our lack of an energy policy that makes us less dependent. I worry about our economic development. I think that we're adopting tax policies right now, and the ag vote was one of those that's becoming very isolationist. It's anti-development, both within the borders of the United States and without. We need people to invest in the United States, and we're one of the second highest tax country in the world right now, and we can't figure out why we have one of the slowest growing economies in the United in the world. I mean, come on, that's 1 + 1.
It is pretty simple economics, and put into those terms, Lee Terry. And for my view, and we both voted no on this farm bill. And when I went to the floor to speak on the bill, I had some documents in front of me, and I'm not very good at reading that stuff. So I thought, I'm going to put together a list of the reasons why a person should vote no on this farm bill. And I thought there were 5 reasons, and I sat down quickly and scratched them out, and I came up with 7 before I ran out of time and was called upon to speak. And I didn't get through the entire 7 before my time was used up, which happens in this town. I once was called upon to solve all the world's problems in 60 seconds, and I had 2 minutes to address the farm bill. But my frustration is that you mentioned. I think that when you abrogate 58 treaties and you break your word with 58 countries, how can you ask them again to ever enter into a bilateral trade agreement, a WTO trade negotiation, or to go back into that same treaty if we're not sincere? That says something about the credibility of the United States.
It does. I just can't understand why our majority party, snuck it in. But, process is... I'm not going to talk about the process. Let's just talk about the policy of double taxation and how they feel that is an appropriate policy. But you're right, the abrogation of our promises, those are signed treaties that we have now broken.
Approved by the Senate.
Approved by the Senate. Mm-hmm. So I don't know why or don't understand why those countries would ever sign another treaty with us again.
You and I come
from they're going to retaliate.
They will retaliate. And you and I come from the part of the country where a deal's a deal. And often it's a handshake or just a nod of the head or a yes over the telephone. And these are signed treaties that are ratified by the Senate, signed by the President. And then to turn around and go back on our deal for so we can get enough money to raise some spending in social spending, and some of it's in environmental spending, which some of that I approve of, but I don't believe it's worth the price to our credibility.
I agree with you.
And additionally, we have significant tax increases that come with that, and you mentioned the retribution that would come. If it's not just the cost to those companies that have their taxes raised here, but when the countries, the 58 countries on the short side of this, decide they'll retaliate, no one has a measure of the cost of that to our U.S. economy.
Well, and by way of agreement, when a U.S. company does business in another country, by agreement, by treaty, they don't tax those dollars. We do. Well, so what's going to happen now is that country is going to start double taxing the U.S. companies doing business out of our country.
And that is an unmeasured cost to the U.S. economy. But what is measured is the contribution of Lee Terry in the United States Congress. He and his wife, Robin, and the 3 boys are just across the river from us, and appreciate you coming on board Conversations with Congressman King.
Thanks, neighbor.
Please join us next time on Conversations with Congressman King. For more information on any of the topics mentioned today, visit the website at house.gov/Steve King.